Welcome to Bengals Scribe Session, presented by JosephOtto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, your Bengals beat writers Paul Daner Jr. and Richard Skinner escort you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium to hear the news, analysis, and observations unfolding within the team from those documenting it daily. All with the sidecar of snark and absurdity you've come to expect. Let's go. We're about to start a party in here. He's made strums and guitar in here.
Up in the air, AJ Green makes the catch.
Oh man!
A deflected ball winds up in the hands of AJ Green, and the clock hits zero.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of Scribe Session. Paul Daner Jr. here with Richard Skinner, fresh off the road, almost literally off the road. I nearly died today. A harrowing day of travel for me.
Yeah, and you know, really probably the easiest part was getting stuck in Dallas for a couple of hours. Your hardest part was navigating I-75. Yeah. We have to tell people about this. Yeah. Navigating I-75 with half a windshield wiper working, does that sound right?
No, well, half. I mean, the full driver's side windshield wiper. I've never had this happen to me before. Driving in through like the construction area of 75 near Hopple, and the windshield wiper just basically pops off. It just comes off right as I'm going 60 miles per hour with no shoulder, and it's sleeting.
Did it like flip? Did it flip backwards or just came?
It was kind of like flipping sideways, like it came unhinged. So it would occasionally work, but it would get stuck and be like flipped out, and then it would come back off and just slam back into the windshield like it was going to break through it. All the meanwhile, not a single drop of water was getting wiped off that space.
No, and probably one of the more dangerous stretches of highway because of all the construction going on there.
Yeah, and people already freaking out because they're driving in sleet.
Right.
So it's just complete madness. I mean, I
shouldn't laugh, but it is.
Yeah. It's funny,
kind of
funny now.
Yeah, it's kind of funny.
It's funny now, but yeah. And thanks to my man, Willie, over at, what was the name of that place?
Willie's Auto Parts.
No, it was not Willie's Auto Parts. It was something auto. They did do repairs.
And sub shop.
Yeah, but you couldn't get in. Like, there were so many cars in the lot that were for sale as well that you couldn't get, like, one person to come
down to Willie's Used Car Emporium. We take in all kinds of cars.
That's basically what it was. You couldn't get in and out with multiple cars. Like, you had to be an expert on like 19-point turns in order just to get in and out of this place. But God bless Willie. He came out and he helped fix my windshield wiper and got me locked up so I could go and drive and get down to Paul Brown Stadium.
That's fantastic. And he did it very quickly, it sounds like.
He was rather efficient. I'll give him credit. I got a credit.
Did Willie laugh at you?
No, he didn't laugh at me. I think he was just happy to do a good deed.
That's nice. What did Willie charge you for said effort?
I gave him a donation. He said he wouldn't charge me anything, but I gave him a donation.
That sounds even nicer.
Yeah, it was nice of
him. No 1099 issues for him.
No.
Exactly. No overcharging for you.
Exactly.
I like those kind of deals.
It all worked out in my
opinion. Willie, if we just outed you to the IRS.
Yeah, my bad. I got nothing for you. I'll be a drop by with a W-9 next week.
Yep.
So that was a weird weekend of football. I'm just amazed at the complete ineptitude of really both teams, but the Buccaneers in particular. I mean, I had heard. You know, you watch the video, you talk to the players and the coaches and people that cover the team down in Tampa, and they all tell you, you know, they just keep finding new ways to lose, and it's just kind of been their thing, and that they stay close, and then they find ways to lose at the end of games. And you say, oh, sure they do. I mean, you know, but come on. How real can that be? It's still no. I mean, that was fresh out of the 1993 Bengals
playbook. Yes, it was. Very much
of
so.
Just always, no matter how many times the other team gives you a chance, just continually screwing it up.
But here's what fans can take solace in, because we're going to talk about the 12 men on the field in a second. The solace that Tampa Bay fans could take in that is, if they'd have lined up to kick the 37-yarder, it would have either been A, a bad snap, B, blocked, or C, wide left. So you, that's why you're 2-10.
Yeah, exactly. I said when they got down to the 31 before the holding penalty,
yes,
I said, you know what? You should just take a knee here. Just take a don't try anything. Just take a knee. And Doc sat next to me, and he goes, you know what? You're right. It's because it's not over. There's probably a holding penalty right around the corner. And then a second later, they nabbed him for a hold. I mean, it was rather prophetic.
It really was, because officials in that circumstance are not quick to make that call unless it is blatantly obvious. And that one had to have been. I didn't see it personally. I know the number that was called on, but that had to be blatantly obvious.
Garrett Gilkey, I mean, has had maybe the worst run that you can have when you've only played a game and a half or whatever. He has all, I mean, he had four penalties against him before, two holding penalties and four snaps before he came into this game. And he was a complete disaster for them yesterday.
Yes, he was.
And how do you possibly hold in that situation? How do you even come near holding in that situation?
Even a missed block is not a bad thing in
that
circumstance.
Just let him through.
Yes.
Let him through. It's you're in field goal range to win the game. So that, and then of course, the 12 men on the field, debacle, outrage. I mean, let's do this. Here, now, we'll give you a quick rundown of some of the things we're going to get to. So you, our fine listeners, we love you.
We love them.
And so want to make sure you
and
know.
And we love JosephAuto.com.
We do love JosephAuto.com. Got to shout them out. Joseph Auto taking care of us. And with all the stuff we do, not just with the podcast. So we're gonna get into the 12 on the field. We are gonna get into, you know what I'm calling this? This is all year there hasn't been a lot of games where there's Marvin Lewis coaching moments that are really debated. He's actually had a pretty smooth year as far as staying away from controversial coaching decisions.
It's funny because a lot of the wins have come fairly, I don't want to say easy, but by a comfortable enough margin where there wasn't much, and the losses really have come by, unfortunately,
comfortable margins
where really coaching didn't make a whole lot of difference in those games either, or coaching decisions for the most part. I mean, really the biggest game that it came down to was probably the Carolina game, and it's hard to find fault in
it wasn't, there was no Marv, but this, for all that it was like, he saved them all up. It was like he saved them all up for one big Marvin Lewis coaching orgy, is what it was, of questionable decisions. I mean,
mostly shake your head moments, and somehow, by the grace of God, he found himself.
He found himself being called
a genius.
A genius.
Yep.
It was in the headline above the video, Marvin Lewis coaching genius.
Marvin Lewis, super genius.
As we all predicted, Marvin Lewis, genius with the challenge flag. And only Marvin will be called a genius by screwing up the way that you actually throw the challenge flag. So let's get into this. Here's the thing. Everyone's been talking about Marvin and being a genius and the challenge flag thing and running on the field and coaches making sure to call the game. I have that is some inept refereeing.
See, I'm going to disagree with you, and
how
I've heard people say that.
No, that is the easiest thing for a referee to do, is before the play, you count off.
And there is somebody's responsibility to do that, no question. I think the unfortunate part is, and the guy had to check ineligible, I'm guessing, every play. The kid that was playing tight end, who was an offensive tackle wearing 75 the whole day, the name escapes me right now. But I'm going to guess, just as an official, as you start to make your count, you kind of blank out when you see the offensive line numbers. Even though you've known all day this guy's a tight end and he's an eligible receiver, it may have just been a sort of just blanking, seeing the 70s and going, all right, I got linemen, and there's five of them, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Right, we're good. I got 11. I got counted 11. As opposed to knowing that extra 70 number was in there. I'm just going to give a little benefit of the doubt just because of that circumstance.
I mean, all you got to do is count, though.
But again, your mind sees a bunch of 60s and 70s coming out of a huddle.
Your mind should count to 11.
Okay, but your mind says there's five of those. I got those five already in my mind. I'm going to count the guys out wide. 6, 7, 8, 9, quarterbacks 10, running backs 11. You didn't account for that extra 70 number. You just didn't do it. You should have. I'm not telling you shouldn't have, but I get where the mistake could come in.
That was fairly sad. And they were about to take another snap with 12.
You know, and I haven't
gone
back and looked, Paul. Did they have a couple snaps prior to that? Do you know?
They did not have 12 on the snaps prior to that.
Okay.
But, they were going to go take another snap and spike it with 12.
With 12 on the field.
With 12 on the field. How bad do you have to be? So I mean, Marvin obviously is the referee. You're just trying to stop the play because you know it's a penalty. You know they didn't see it. You know it's reviewable, but you can't control it. So he freaked out. He should have just run out and said they need to review that. Are you getting buzzed? If not, timeout before they can do anything. Just call timeout. He didn't need to go and throw the challenge flag. It served the exact same purpose.
It did, and that's the point that should be made. For however he needed to get the officials' attention, he got it. Right, wrong, or indifferent, whether that challenge flag is allowed to be thrown or not, which it's not because it's underneath 2 minutes, whatever he needed to do to get their attention to stop the game, and that's the one thing that allows him to do the booth review of stopping the game, the kudos I'm going to give him for that is he at least got him to stop the play. It wasn't a, should I throw the flag? What's the protocol? Just stop the play. Find a way to, if you had to run on the field like a madman, stop the play.
Before we go with the super genius, Dean Blandino, the head of officials, came out and said that they were stopping the play as Marvin Lewis ran out there. They were buzzing down from up top to stop it.
That's convenient now after your officiating crew screwed it up a little bit. Let's face facts. The officiating crew screwed it up to begin with.
They did screw it up to begin with, but it was going to get reviewed. I mean,
that's easy to say in retrospect. It's easy for them to say now because obviously they counted 12. It took Marvin. It wasn't just the play was over and Marvin was right on time. It was the play was over. They're getting ready to go back to the line of scrimmage, and then he's running down. Yeah. He throws the flag, and he's the one that causes play to stop. I'm sorry, I'm going to doubt what they're saying, but I'm doubting what they're saying.
You're saying the officials of the NFL in New York City, the front office people, would lie to us?
I'm saying absolutely, because the man in charge is a liar. So, yes, that trickles itself down.
Careful, you can get suspended for talking like that.
I know, I'm sorry. Is it like talking about the President of the United States in bad terms?
That was the conclusion of it, just that insane final drive, which started with Huber's punt barely going into the end zone, one that you're not used to him. It was the one mistake he made all day.
And it looked like for a second when it hit, I thought for a second it was going to turn dead right, because it looked like that's exactly where it was going and going out of bounds at the one. It instead took a huge hop up in the air, which it rare. I mean, usually his punts like that, we saw one earlier in the game, bounce backwards. And the play by the guy, I can't remember if it was Dre or if it was Denard that jumped in the end zone.
It was too far in.
He made a valiant effort to try to throw it back into play.
So that sets him up at the 20. So that's mistake number one.
No timeouts left.
No timeouts, and you're at, by the way, the clock operator situation, which we haven't talked about yet.
Yeah, I want to get on that to get to the clock.
I'm trying to figure out
how only 6 seconds ran off on that punt. Can you
help me
with
that? Because they didn't start the clock until it was at the peak. The punt was at its peak. It was about 3 seconds.
And no one looked
seconds.
At that, so don't tell me that New York was paying attention. Because I thought it's funny you say that, Paul. The punt took place at 2:07 on the game.
2:07.
You figure 4 and some change of hang time alone. Okay, that right there is almost 5 seconds.
Plus the snap back
and the bounce, and then the try to catch it and the throw it back in. It should have been about $1.58 on the clock. That 1 second was huge because it did give him a free play before
the
2 minute
warning.
Right.
It was a free timeout to run a play over the middle. And so that happens. So you go, and then they look like they have him shut down, and Reggie Nelson misses a tackle on Charles Sims. He takes off for about a 30-yard missed tackle.
Yep.
And you're thinking, there's no way that this is really going to happen here. And then another play, and they get down to the 31, and it's basically over.
Yep.
And then what we talked about earlier, the hold and the challenge. There were so many dynamics to that drive, and we can really put into words how devastating that loss would have been.
Oh.
Because Doc and I were talking about this before the game. He said, "What are your? Where would you 1 to 10 rank this at, on the upset meter?" And I said, "As the possibility it would happen, or how brutal it would be if it did." And he said, "The possibility would happen." I said, "I put it at a 6." And then he said, "Well, what about how bad it would be?" I said, "Off the charts."
Yeah,
so far off the charts. You have to, with your schedule, Steelers who are 7-5 twice, Denver, obviously, and going to Cleveland, who's 7-5, right. Now, you're going to force yourself to have to win three or find a way to end up in front of the AFC North with three teams that are all a half game behind you yep. with that schedule that you have because you would have just dropped a bomb on your wild card chances.
Well, in the fact of the way you would have lost, you gave away at least 3 points with the interception in the end zone. You gave away another possible 3 points with the interception where Andy's trying to throw the ball out of bounds. You gave them 3 points with the first interception of the game. You gave them another 3 points, and we'll touch on this with the moronic onside kick. I mean, just all that adding up on either side, that's a 12-point swing either way where that last drive shouldn't have even mattered.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But it was kind of a wild last drive, and I want to bring in George Iloka, who we talked to after the game, and he was just talking about the last drive and some of the ridiculousness in it and how he just never really thought that there was any way they were going to lose. And I think if you watch enough Buccaneers film, it's understandable why he feels that way. Here's George Iloka.
What's going through your head on that drive? It was a roller coaster. It looked like you had him 2-3 times. Just, I mean, is that drive emotionally hard to even handle?
It was, I mean, no, it just, this might be weird, but some way, somehow, I'm like, man, I don't think we're going to lose because we giving like how we came out, we shouldn't have won, you know, but we came back and we battled through all our own mistakes and we found a way to win. So given all the mistakes that we did and we were still up in the game, I'm like, oh, we're destined to win. So I don't know, even though they have plays here, I'm like, even if it comes down to a field goal, I'm like, he's gonna miss it. That's just my mindset. So I don't know, I was pretty positive the whole way through. I don't know why. So.
You kind of felt like at halftime looking back on it now that you shouldn't have won because of all the turnovers and stuff like that, or just everything.
Not should have, but I'm just looking back on all the turnovers and like how we came out as a team, you just say to yourself, like, if we don't win, we did this to ourselves. Not like they just came out here and, you know, whooped our ass or something like that. Like, we had some of our own mistakes that put us in the position for it to come down to the last drive. So with all the mistakes we shot ourselves in the foot with, we were still in the game. We were still leading. So I just felt like we're destined to win.
Yeah, when you watch the Bucs, you just always kind of feel like you're going to find the way to come out on top.
There are seasons for teams where nothing can seem to, for whatever reason, and I don't know how that comes about. You know, you saw last year. Remember Detroit at the end of last
2010
year?
Cincinnati Bengals 10-game losing streak was like this.
Yeah,
every week was something different. That 12 men on the field reminded me of when New Orleans came to town and Pat Sims jumped off on 4th-and-2 on the play that was titled by New Orleans "No Brainer Freeze," which because everybody, it's a no brainer that everybody knows that they're just trying to draw you offsides. Just where
the old it never
week.
Works hard count.
Yeah. I mean, one of those things where it doesn't matter. The inconceivable always seems to happen to you. And the Bucks did that. And George always kind of had that feeling. It was obviously one of those seasons for them. But their defense is good now. Their defense is really good.
They have some good parts. I mean, that interior of the defensive line is good. I mean, don't forget they were playing yesterday without Lavonte David, who's been off the charts. He got 114 tackles going into yesterday.
Awesome.
Ferner's good. Banks is a nice player. I mean, they've got some nice parts.
Yeah, they do. Not on offense. Not a one on offense.
I'd take Mike Evans.
Well, Mike Evans. They have one.
I like Mike Evans a lot.
They have one. Yeah, and no quarterback.
He's got a chance to be really good.
Yeah, no. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said it. I forgot about it. They have no other conceivable piece.
Yeah, Logan Mankins is
about
it.
How about this? Here's a little behind-the-scenes nugget for you. So after the play, when they go down there with 12 men on the field and everyone's assuming that they're about to go win, AC, our boy Anthony Collins, who has a number of enemies that he's drawn the line in the sand against here in this building and a reason why he's in Tampa Bay, running up and down the sideline, giving the Bengals the old finger wag.
Don't do that.
And, I mean, like, just in their faces. I mean, absolutely trying to rub it in on them. And then behind him was the 12 men on the field penalty being collected.
How good is that?
Eventually got called, and he had to tuck his tail between his legs and go back over
and go
to the other.
Go sit on his.
And go commit a false start.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not. I loved AC. I really enjoyed talking to AC when he was here. But don't be like that. But that's the way he is. He's always been like that. That's kind of his personality. He's got the chip on the shoulder, and he thought he was getting screwed for 4 years here.
Well, I tell you this much: both he and Michael Johnson earned themselves some nice paydays, and they're neither one are playing very well, and both are on a 2-10 team. So.
Yeah. AC is playing particularly horrible.
Horribly.
Michael is getting the benefit of the doubt down there and has done some good things, but I think...
But not enough.
I think the coaches there expected him to become this 11-sack guy, or the fans did, and that's not who he was.
Well,
he had the 1 year with all the sacks, but that's not who he was.
You'd also think that, though, with Gerald McCoy being able to draw a lot of double-team stuff and free him up. No question about that part of it. But yeah, you're right. You're right. And it's funny. I've got a lot, I'm sure you too, of tweets of, you know, the Bengals have not rushed the passer very well. How much would Michael Johnson help? Look, would he have helped? Probably. But that's one of those ones where you've got to make a decision on where does your money go. And you can't – Marvin Lewis on Friday was talking to us about that very thing. He'd like to keep them all. You just – this league doesn't allow you to do it.
No, you can't. The system is set up to do the opposite of that. It's set up to have guys go and make more money elsewhere to keep the teams even, which – little tangent about that. I want to get to let's real quick run through these other two here. Of part of the Marvin Lewis
magic.
Yeah. So let's go to the onside kick.
Oh, let's.
Which is maybe if we were ranking, and this would be quite a show. Do one of those NFL Network top tens of worst Marvin Lewis coaching
Mania
decision. I mean, this one. I could get on there and rant pretty good about this one for one or two.
I could absolutely do the same thing, and I like outside the box stuff. I really do.
I like the spirit of the idea.
I like what Hugh Jackson did during the one drive where they were doing all kinds of gadgety stuff because he just determined, you know what, we ain't doing anything normal. Let's do something there. I love outside the box stuff.
Yeah,
but there's also time and circumstance to do that. Yes, Marvin after the game said we saw something in what they were doing. Great, you had that tucked away in your mind for when you need to pull it out.
Yeah.
But after taking a 14-10 lead, the fact that your defense had given up 12 yards in six plays in the second half to that point, that's not the time to put it. Tampa wasn't going to drive the ball on you the rest of the day.
No.
They were not.
The defense had been so good.
Why give them 3 points?
The Bucs looked completely inept those first two drives. I mean, you had every chance in the world that you were going to stop them and they were going to be punting right back to you. They could not prove that they could drive the field to then just hand them a short field.
Hand them 3 points.
You just handed them 3 points, or at least a very good chance of getting 3 points. Not having to go anywhere is unfathomable.
Because then what the circumstance it set up was the ability at the end to do what?
Kick a
drive
field goal.
Down to kick a field goal to win the game.
Right, right.
I know you prepped for it. I'm sure on film it was we're going to get them at least one time in this. You want to do that? You want to start the game doing that or start a half doing that? By all means.
Yeah.
But in that, especially when you were down. But in that circumstance, no way. No way, no how. Even if they had recovered it, I would have thought it was a moronic play to make.
I agree.
Honestly.
I agree.
I just, but that's one that just boggles my mind.
It's getting so stuck in you being so proud that you saw this.
Yep, that's what it was.
And not being able to see the bigger picture of what it would mean if it didn't work. Just beyond my capacity, whatever.
Yeah, 30-27 shootout at that point.
Here's another trend. So for the second week in a row, we discuss poor clock management before halftime. Now, discussing poor clock management with this team is nothing new. It's been going on here forever, ever since, Marvin Lewis has been the head coach. And it's not, he's not the only one. There's a lot of coaches around this league who struggle with. Go check out Mike Tomlin
and
what happened with Pittsburgh
me.
Against New Orleans. Yeah, just not having any feel for it. So this latest is you have 3 timeouts.
You're at the 36-yard line.
You have
took over at the 40 following the interception.
Yeah, and you run one play, and it's complete. Now, you talked to Hugh Jackson about this.
I did.
Because the question was, you have 3 timeouts. Why are you not taking one when there's all kinds of confusion on the field? I mean, Marvin Lewis kind of said after the game, well, you know, it was a thing where you were trying to keep them off balance. You don't want to give them time to line up. Well, guess what? It took you 20 seconds to figure it out.
And I'm paraphrasing.
You're trying to stay on the attack.
I'm paraphrasing his quote because you talked to him about it. But the paraphrase of the quote was, you use timeouts for different reasons, not always in that circumstance. And I thought, no, that's exactly why you have the timeouts, or is for that circumstance. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. He's claiming that he chose not to use the timeout for a reason of keeping them off.
Well,
yeah, but you're trying to score a touchdown, are you not?
And then Hugh Jackson.
Shouldn't you be?
Yeah, Hugh Jackson then, he was a little more vague in his answer when I asked him about it. But the one thing I came away with from what he said was, I need to find out what our goal is in those circumstances. I mean, was the goal to go kick a field goal? Was the goal to not give Tampa the ball back? Was the goal to go score a touchdown? I would hope when you take over at the plus 40 with 56 seconds left and three timeouts, the goal is a minimum of a field goal.
That you're trying to score a touchdown. And that's what it appears. What if we're reading the tea leaves statement, and that's dangerous.
Because this is all we're doing is we're trying. This is an opinion only.
Yeah.
But I think we both share a little bit of this
opinion. Is that there is some miscommunication between Marvin Lewis and Hugh Jackson in that circumstance now 2 weeks in a row of what you want to do. And because last week in Houston, that was the epitome of a team not knowing what it's
correct.
Trying to do.
They were
trying to go, then they were going slow, and none of it made any sense. Either one or the other. Pick one and go with it. Same thing here. It appears when if you're taking that much time, that you're just trying to kind of keep them off balance, run a play or two, and kick a field goal. Or are you trying to go for it? Because Hugh should have been expecting a timeout if he thought they were going for a touchdown. And maybe that's what happened, is that he didn't get one when he thought he was going to get one.
This is strictly opinion, strictly reading between the lines. My opinion of the whole circumstance is that the head coach is the one in charge of calling timeouts. I mean, that's his role. As an assistant, you can probably ask, can we take a timeout here? And it appears as if Hugh has called a play. The play is run. Hugh is assuming, Marvin, can I take a timeout? If he's getting feedback that says, no, don't use a timeout here, then suddenly, as opposed to thinking, all right, I'm going to have my quarterback here on the sideline with me. We can go over a couple of things we're going to do. He then is having to scramble to make a, you know, looking at his chart going, all right, now we're second and six. What do I got? All right, Andy, let's go with da-da-da-da-da-da. And then Andy's now, you know, a lot of times in two-minute warnings, as you know, or in two-minute offenses, you're a lot of times just running the same formation until you get maybe a dead ball because you don't want guys scrambling everywhere. You want to get set, get to the line, get the playoff. You're not changing formations much. You may run something to one side, then something to the other side out of the same formation, but you're not changing formations. Andy's trying to change formations because I'm guessing Hughes, whatever he's calling off of the sheet, is something that he's not prepared to do that quickly. And so that's why I think you see such a cluster, and I think it goes back to Marvin. Let him, if you want to use timeout, I mean, you need to use the timeouts.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt. So, I mean, the thing is, though, here's really the
and
more important point.
Rather
than breaking down why this happened in these last two games, here's the more important point of this. It's December, folks.
Yep.
If you don't know how to handle a two-minute situation and get a feel for the timeouts and how you're going to do a drive in that scenario, and it's December, there's no reason to believe that it's going to get figured out.
I think it will.
Maybe that helped.
I think
maybe they needed those two.
Maybe they did.
But it happened last week, and it didn't help this week.
No, you're right.
I think it's just something that this team's going to have to hope they don't have to worry about. A playoff game or a huge game against Pittsburgh or something like that.
And Andy had not thrown his third interception at that point. He was about to throw his third interception.
Yes.
And maybe it was Marvin just in his mind going, the best I want to do is get into field goal range here, chew up some clock, and not have him throw a pick six the other way.
Right.
Maybe
that's what it is. But that's something that needs a whole lot of work.
Yes, it does.
Speaking of things that need a whole lot of work, let's talk about Andy Dalton. Who had a very interesting day, and I'm not going to – we don't need to sit here and talk about things that come out of people's bodies and vomit, and I'm not going to do it. Which, by the way, I think I hold the record for now most stories written about vomiting quarterbacks in a season.
I wrote about
Matt Scott at least twice.
I did the Matt Scott follow-up.
You had the follow. I've written about him at least twice in some capacity, and now – we have one yesterday. Thankfully, I only have one. Who else has three stories about vomiting quarterbacks in a season as an NFL beat guy?
You have cornered the market. You will win the league, the Football Writers Association of America.
I want
award
that in
for
the
most vomiting quarterback stories.
I want that in the fact and record book next year. That has all the NFL records in it. That's where I want. I want that my get me a little plaque or something. So we've got we had good Andy, who's Andy Griffith. We have bad Andy, who's Andy Dick, and this is just sick Andy, which I assume is just Andy Dick kind of in the 5 hours after he starts to officially come down off like a 8-day meth bender. He's just not doing well, just withdraw shakes, nothing's happening, you know, just awful, mentally defunct. Here's the thing, though, about this was as adamant as I can remember Hugh and Marvin after a game kind of ripping into Andy's play a little bit the first half.
Yeah, not letting the illness be an excuse.
No, and really just talked about how bad he was.
And he was terrible.
Yeah, he was terrible.
And think about it. The three interceptions all came in different messed up ways. The first one was just simply a horrible throw throwing it behind A.J. Green.
No, it was mistiming. It looked like, I don't know the details of what it was. Where if A.J. was cutting his route off 3 steps earlier, it would have probably been right there for him, but it was thrown and AJ kept running, and right when he turned around the ball was already passed.
I'm gonna give AJ the benefit of the doubt of running to the dead spot of the zone, because there was a giant hole in the middle of that zone that he was running to that mm-hmm. the quarterback should have seen as well. Second throw was completely into double coverage, completely. Yeah. The third throw, I guess he was throwing it out of bounds. I'm assuming he was throwing it out of bounds, but it sure didn't look like it was going
out of
bounds.
If you're trying to throw it out of bounds, I don't know how it ends up going so far down the field. It's easy to throw the ball out of bounds.
You're right.
Who knows? He claims what he's trying to do, but it was awful. He admitted it was awful, and it's not a secret.
Now, the funny part is,
the second one was the worst.
Oh, no question.
And that's the problem, because
that cost you at least 3 points.
That's mental. It's all on the mental side. It's that getting in your own head thing with Dalton that you saw in Cleveland and you've seen so many times before, that you were hoping that he's found ways to work through. And maybe it was big because he came back and was so good in the second half.
Great. He was not just good. He was great in the second half. I mean, great.
He made a lot of great throws.
Yeah, he made a great throw to A.J. Green on third down in which the pass interference, which was a bogus pass interference, but pass interference was called, wiped it out. Very next play, came right back to Mohamed Sanu. Couldn't have threw that as well as he's ever thrown a pass in his life.
Yeah.
And Mohamed Sanu, unfortunately, drops it.
Yeah, drops it.
The touchdown pass to A.J. was a dart. The pass to James Wright, he makes the pump fake to freeze a guy and then throws a ball that he couldn't have thrown it to a better spot. Either James Wright catches it or no one else catches it. James Wright made a great catch on
it. An unbelievable catch, yeah. Just a great play. Well, I mean, so you saw, but here's... Does it mean anything to you that he turned around the second half?
Yes.
Is that important?
Because I've seen him fold. I've seen him fold tent before. We've seen it not just once, and we saw it blatantly against Cleveland, where he threw a couple of picks. The home crowd got on him. He couldn't handle the home crowd getting on him. And the more he played, the worse he got. And then, voila, why not, for good measure, throw one more pick?
Yeah.
This game was... The third pick's the only one I can say, all right, maybe he was trying to throw it away and just didn't get it there far enough. But just mentally, just getting over that hurdle the second half of there were times in the second half he threw the ball and I'm holding my breath thinking, boy, you can't throw it. You can't possibly throw one more tough ball. You better make them all little dump-offs and get rid of it. No, he was throwing some darts.
Yeah.
And taking some chances.
Yeah, no, I thought... that was a nice bounce back, but I do want to bring in a little bit of Dalton after the game, talking about sort of, you know, just getting through the illness and how much it affected him, just to get you a feel for sort of where he was at in discussing his very interesting about 12 hours after the game. So this is Andy Dalton in a weirdo podium they set up in a hallway for us
in St. Pete.
In St. Pete, yeah, basically. Maybe it's got to be the worst press conference area in the loop. So don't mind some of the sound, but this is Andy Dalton.
Yeah, just as the game went on, I started to feel better, but it was a long night for me last night.
Guys were saying that even right before the game, you were still struggling with it. Were you ever wondering if you were going to play through it or be able to play?
I was going to try to play through it regardless, so, it is what it is. Hopefully, I don't have to deal with that anymore.
How much did you feel like it was kind of affecting your play? Did it feel different, like you're trying to work through other things?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to make any excuses for the way things started out. It's obviously isn't something that you want to deal with, but you know, I'm not saying that's the reason the way things came out the way it did.
So there's the Andy situation, which is, hey, it's December, so it's about to all come to a head. And we'll learn a whole lot about Andy Dalton over the next few games. And then if they make it to the playoffs, you have your fourth installment of can this guy figure it out?
You know, though, and it's all legitimate questions to bring up, and that story doesn't go away until he does do something in January. But if you were to have a quarterback take you to four straight playoffs, man, that's a hell of an accomplishment. Despite his faults, despite his issues, despite his occasional just what is he thinking? And you can argue, yeah, there's talent around him. I'm not here to argue that point, but still, 4 years as a starter to go to four straight. You can argue there's been a lot of quarterbacks in this league that teams have not been able to do that with that are Andy Dalton like.
You're absolutely right. I mean, people are turning on Colin Kaepernick over there in San Francisco. He's been awful. He's taken them to the conference championship of the Super Bowl.
Yeah, right.
I mean, so there's guys that have done more that are getting more flack. It happens around the league. It's just part of being a quarterback that guys have highs, ups, and downs, and they got to fight through them outside of the big six quarter, you know, of Rodgers, Luck, Manning, Brady, all those guys. I mean, even Drew Brees. The whole thing is about how New Orleans is pissed they didn't take a quarterback last year, and they're going to take one real high this year to plan for Drew Brees' demise. I watched that game yesterday against Pittsburgh when I was during my delay time today. Drew Brees was dropping dimes
down the field. He threw the ball extremely well.
I mean, it's just there's no quarterback in this league is immune to getting ripped.
Right.
Because it's a hard position to play, and I'm not defending Andy Dalton. He's his own beast.
Yes, he is.
And he's gonna have to fight this through December, and we'll see if the same storyline hits him. But he's not alone as far as quarterbacks that go through highs and lows.
Now let's talk about what this team can accomplish in December. You know, they've put themselves now obviously in a very good place to win the division, where probably 2-2 wins the division. Agreed.
They need 2 wins.
Yeah.
That should be good.
But you now have positioned yourself
Although Baltimore has a really easy schedule if they can get past Miami.
Correct, and they will close at home against Cleveland. So yeah. You're right. But 2-2 probably does it. That being said, though, now and even 2-2 gets you 10-5-1. I mean, everybody else now in the wild card hunt that's a 5-loss team, Miami, Buffalo, and Kansas City, they would have to all, at least one of those would have to run the table as well. Yeah. That's probably not going to happen either. So you're at least in the cusp of 2-2 getting to the playoffs. But if you run the table in December, which would be a huge if because of what you're playing.
If this team runs the table in December,
you will guarantee yourself a first round bye.
Why are we going to talk about fictional things?
Well, because I wrote about it. That's why. But because again, this is a team that's won 3 in a row now. And granted, you can argue who they were against and the way this most.
What do you want
game
me to do as a public embarrassment bet if this team wins 4 straight games to make it in December? What do you name it? You ponder that one.
Public embarrassment. I mean,
I've already sang on this podcast.
Yes, you have.
All right, I already did a full.
Public embarrassment.
You think whatever it is you want to do, if you're listening to this and you
bicycle in a diaper on Fountain Square?
Why has it got to be a diaper?
I don't know why. It always just comes up.
And I'm doing this out of the goodness of my heart with not getting anything in return. So let's keep it a little bit, you know, under some.
All right, just a diaper on Fountain Square.
All right, no tricycle. I like a tricycle, though. I would ride the tricycle as long as I can wear pants.
Maybe I'll have to come up with something. But if, let's play the if-ing game with me.
Okay, I will play this game.
The old University of Kentucky football coach, Jerry Claiborne, he never liked it. He always called me, he said, when you bring it up, it's just nothing but an if-ing game, and I ain't playing no if-ing game with you.
No if-ing game.
But I'm play the if-ing game. If-ing, okay. They go 4-0 this month. And finish 12-3-1. They guarantee a first round bye.
Sure.
And then if New England loses one game, they would have home field throughout.
Yeah.
Now that's pretty amazing.
So for one week,
did you put yourself in that position to maybe do that?
No, they've put themselves in a great position. I'm not denying that.
And I don't know how they've done. That's the thing that I'm trying to ponder.
They've done it without beating a great team.
Or without looking like a great team.
Without looking like a great team.
You know, they've
team.
Lost three. The 3 losses were each by, what, 21 points apiece, at least. by a combined 74 points. Good teams don't lose three games by 20-plus points.
They don't.
Yet, bad teams also don't find a way to win, to not lose their other nine games and go 8-0-1 in those other nine. And you could argue opponent. I'll give you some of that. But in some of those wins, they've also looked really, really good doing that. It's been a weird, weird season in that regard. So why not a 4-0 in December?
I mean, when you watch Green Bay play New England,
they look like they're on a different stratosphere. It's a different level. I don't deny that fact.
And here's the thing. This team, whenever it's faced a top high-end opponent in the AFC, I think it's pretty clear who those teams are. New England, Denver, Indy, probably. I would throw them maybe in there, even though they're worse.
You could argue Baltimore in there. If you're going to argue that they could run the table, go 11-5, you could argue it.
If you let San Diego come into your house and beat you, I'm with you. I got a problem with you.
San Diego all of a sudden now is 8-4 and right, going to play for first place in a few weeks.
Anyway, I'm just saying, if you're talking about the elite of the AFC, I think it's pretty clear who they are. And you are what your record says you are, and the Bengals have gotten beat up by them. And they'll have a chance when Peyton comes here on that Monday night.
And they could get housed. Could get housed.
Absolutely they could, just like they have been in the two other games against
the
top teams.
But you also have a secondary that you and I think has played awful well this year playing against that group. So it's your strength against their strength.
Yeah, they've played awful well. They didn't play awful well against Brady, and they didn't play awful well against Andrew Luck.
I'll give you a little bit of that. The Andrew Luck one of those throws was over a linebacker's head. Let's not forget.
Well.
But.
That's fine.
I'm just saying. The secondary's played well.
And I'm not trying to come across as you know, Debbie Downer-ish
here. No, 4-0 my eyeballs don't tell me this team can go 4-0 in December.
My eyeballs don't tell me that they belong in these conversations with these teams that we're talking about.
But my eyeballs also didn't tell me after that Cleveland loss that they had any chance in Hades of going 3-0 on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they did.
They've been very good at beating teams they should.
They improved in the one area.
This road trip is impressive, and it should make everyone rethink what they previously thought about this team.
Because, Paul, they improved in the one area that you and I questioned at the midway point.
Defense, yeah.
What could they do to fix themselves defensively? However it's been done, the last three games against the run, there was a little bit of yesterday where Tampa gouged them a couple times, but after that, nothing.
They shut it down.
Nothing. 71 yards in the last three games. And yes, I know you could argue that Tampa was one of the worst running teams in the NFL. And New Orleans, even though it had Ingram hot, is not the greatest running team in the world. And Houston was without Arian Foster.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, they stoned all three.
When they had been getting gouged by Little Sisters of the Poor before that.
Correct.
Just about anybody would run all over them. The defense, the run that they did the last three, and they weren't all slouch offenses. If you look at where they're rated, obviously New Orleans is a top three offense.
Fitzy threw 1,000 touchdown passes yesterday.
Right. I mean, you know, Houston is about a middle of the pack.
Right.
In Tampa, their offense ranks about 26, 27. Yeah, they're dreadful. But they have Mike Evans going for them. So I'm just saying it's not like it was all because they played bad offenses at all. So, I mean, you got to credit the defense and what they've done. The last three games, they're the best defense in football. They've only allowed two touchdowns over the last three games. They've allowed second fewest yards per play. I mean, their numbers across the board over the three-game span have been incredible. And now they've got four games to keep it going and a quality offense and the Steelers coming in. Let's go into this. So what's some storylines that you think we got to track? Steelers obviously coming to town. I mean,
stopping the deep ball. I mean, and they've been so good at it all year, the Bengals.
Yeah, I mean, that was the big thing. I wrote a little bit about it in game day and talked about it on the pregame, actually, with Dave and Dan, because they were talking about Mike Evans. And so, that's the thing is, it's what the Bengals have done so well all year. They've only allowed four passes in the air of over 30 yards.
Yeah, I mean, you look at yesterday, even the only fairly long completion to a wide receiver was literally a throw it up and hope, and Mike Evans dove on the sideline and made a great catch on that.
Short of the six, yeah.
Right. That was literally the best catch that they made the whole game. The other, the long screen pass that almost set him up was a missed tackle that should have been a 6-yard gain, turned into a whatever 34-yard game.
Every time teams have tried to throw over the top, it's been Terrence Newman step for step, Adam Jones step for step.
Leon Hall has been a little iffy at times.
He's had iffy at times, but T.Y. Hilton had the long ball over him at one point, and the Jags had one on him at one point. But, I mean, Iloka and Nelson have been right there. They're just doing a great job of getting everything checked down and keeping everything in front of them and not letting anybody hit the home runs on them. Really, I mean, you know, the opener against Steve Smith is the only time we've seen a guy just absolutely cruising off into space.
And that was arguably, and Adam Jones admitted after the game, that was him making a mistake where he peaked at the wrong time and didn't realize someone had got behind him. Now, again, that's part of coverage, but it wasn't like he was running stride for stride and Steve Smith ran away from him. That was really, he blew a coverage.
Yeah, and the Steelers will come in and absolutely chuck it. I mean, anybody that's watched these rivalries know what Ben Roethlisberger likes to do. He likes to throw the ball up. He's thrown 63 passes further than 20 yards in the air this year.
That's crazy.
Second in the NFL, only Andrew Luck has more at 67.
That's five a game on average.
Yeah, they opened up against New Orleans. Bomb. Just, I mean, he didn't connect on it, but it was just, it was clear. First play, this is what we're calling. We're gonna hit deep shots. That's what we do. And that's just kind of the way that they've looked at it. It's going to be a huge deal for the Bengals to pull that off.
Other storyline is who plays right tackle? Clint Bowling, Marshall Newhouse, they both played right tackle
Sunday.
That was weird to me yesterday.
It was weird. Here's what we talked about this.
The answer was weird to me.
Yeah, we talked about this last week, and it seemed, Newhouse is the guy, but the point is, if it's about getting your five best linemen on the field, you would move Bowling over and have Pollock out there. That all sounds fine and good, but if Bowling hasn't practiced at right tackle or played it since he was in college.
And for those who don't know, he played,
30 games. 30 games. He started at one of the tackle spots in Georgia. He played almost every spot on the line for them. So he did it in college, but he hasn't really done it since with the Bengals. But so during practice last week, they started working him out there a little bit, contingency plans. And sure enough, right there, about midway through the second quarter, out comes Clint Bowling. He's in at right tackle. Pollock's in at left, and they stayed that way through the end of halftime. It ended up being 19 snaps and then 42 with the Newhouse formation. I talked to Clint Bowling after the game about that, about how he felt it went, about why he felt like they did it and where it came from. Here's a little bit of what Clint Bowling had to say after the game about his move.
The second quarter there, you moved out and started playing tackle. Was that something you knew was going to happen?
We worked on it a little bit during the week. With Andre getting hurt, it just kind of puts guys in positions that, you have to move around some. And, we don't know what's going to happen. So it's just, maybe a little experience just to, get out there and see how it goes. And so there's, definitely glad I got to get out there and do that. Just, because you never know how it's going to play out.
How did you feel like it?
It was okay. Definitely some things I could work on, but for the most part, it was fine.
Yeah. That's the biggest thing is you wouldn't want to have to go out there in a huge spot and have had a playoff game or something like that and not have had any reps out there at all.
So. Yeah, and I think that's why that definitely helped. One of the reasons we probably did it just to see how it goes out there and see what our options are. Because we're pretty banged up right now and just kind of have to adjust and move on.
So I get this, and I don't know if you do. I get it because here's the thing. Here's what you don't want to happen. There's a number of things at play here. You don't want all of a sudden you're in the first round of the playoffs and Marshall Newhouse gets hurt.
Understood.
And Clint Bowling has not played a snap at right tackle, but that's your best option out there in a game. So you want to get him some snaps, right? That's one. Two, I want a point of reference before I go doing a whole game with that lineup against Pittsburgh.
Maybe.
To see. I want a point of reference to see if that is a better formation, if they are better without.
I just don't know if you use game time as experiment time.
Well, if you're going to do it, you're not going to learn it in practice. You got to be out there doing it in the live, or else what's the point? I mean,
well, if that's the case, then why would you not play backups 8 to 10 snaps a game just to play him? Why would Nico Johnson not come in for Ray Maluga 8 to 10 snaps?
If you're going to do it, you do it against Tampa.
I don't know. I thought Marshall Newhouse was really bad early in that game, and frankly, I thought he got yanked. And they decided, all right, maybe this isn't working out the way we thought. Let's go back to Marshall, see if he's ready. That's my own opinion. I just don't know if you use
maybe they
as
did
experimentation
yank him and decide later. You know, maybe we should just calm down on that. I think you needed to know what you had in them off a smaller portion. And the way they did it, at the timing they did it, leading up to halftime, in the first half, recoverable, to me that felt of a contrived plan that they planned, that was set up that way.
I'm going to bite my tongue when I say this. I'm going to probably bite it in half when I say this. I'll have to take them at their word for that.
Yeah.
I will. Because Newhouse did come back in and did play the second half and did finish the game. So, and did have some moments where he struggled a little bit in the second half of the game, and they chose to keep him out there. So maybe that was the case. Maybe that's all it was.
I feel like it was a thing where they wanted to see.
But I just go back to, if that's the case, let's put Darquez Dennard in for 8 to 10 snaps. Let's put Dre in for 8 to 10 snaps. Let's put Sean Williams at safety for 8 to 10. So you don't do that. You just don't do it.
Well, you don't do it when it's not an issue. I mean, you know what your other option is. I mean, this is not about trying Darquez Dennard out because you are thinking about playing him later. It's about trying out a guy because Marshall Newhouse isn't very good.
I'll give you that part.
So you've got to start weighing options, and the only way to really weigh options is by trotting them out there, and you know, for 2 to 3 drives before halftime of a game against the worst team in football, arguably, is probably the time to do it if you're going to do it. Rather, because guess what? Maybe against Pittsburgh, it comes out in the starting lineup is Clint Bowling at right tackle, Mike Pollock at left guard.
And that may well be, and that was kind of left open today a little bit, or on Monday that. We'll see what happens at that right tackle position. The only thing I would tell you is, if it was working well with Bowling at right tackle, and I'm not skilled enough to know if it was, why not stick with it the whole game? Why not just keep rolling with it?
Yeah. That's a good question. And you know, we'll talk to guys this week about that, and we'll figure out a little bit more. But I just got the sense that it was the plan. And they were going to stick with the plan.
I'll take their word at it.
You make a good point. So we don't know how well it was working, and maybe they wanted to just do it that way, go back, watch the film afterwards, and assess the two sides.
I just don't think you use regular season games to do that. It's my own opinion. Maybe we need to see Jason Campbell out there for a couple seconds.
Well, that's why you're not a head football coach.
I realize that. Thank you, Marvin. Appreciate that very much. Neither of the people
that's why
pro
you do what you
do,
and I do what I do.
Exactly right.
His rip on PFF last week.
And my last storyline for the week, just for you, Paul, is that? Will he or won't he return from injury? Fontez Burfict. Oh, you thought I was going to say Tyler Eifert, didn't you?
Oh, thank God you didn't say Tyler Eifert. Although Burfict is starting to make me as angry as Tyler Eifert questions are.
Now, he supposedly did work out a little bit before Sunday's game, but yeah. that doesn't, and I did see him on the sideline during the game, obviously. But
when I see him,
he limps like a son of a gun still when
I
see him.
He does. That's what you see. You cannot deny what it looks like.
And my own opinion of this is if you will know he's going to play in a week if he practices on a Wednesday. I think it's the whole, if he's not back by
Wednesday.
If I see
him working out on
the
side.
Yeah, and he's not done that
until
yet.
Until I see that, I'm not fielding questions.
That's even add a week to it. I mean, you know, usually for them, it's work on the side for a week,
yeah.
Then get back to practice the next week. We didn't see that this past week. Now, we did, I guess, on Sunday, but we'll see if he's working on the side. If he's working on the side on Wednesday, I would tell fans he's not coming back this week, that he will be back another week. If I don't see him working on the side this week, add another week to it.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, who knows what the heck has gone on there? Because we were just fed BS by people that, because they wanted a different message out
correct.
There, which happens all the time. I'm used to being lied to.
And let's face facts. As great of a player as he is, and he is, the last 3 weeks, they haven't missed much of a beat with him. They missed in the first couple, but that was when Ray Maluga wasn't in the middle.
They just needed somebody.
They needed somebody. Yeah. One of the two of them back. Well, one of the two of them is now back. That defense has played very well.
Yeah. I mean, obviously they would like to get him back in a week or two
and
have him for the last few of a playoff run. I mean, he can bring in edge, and I think he would pop right in and be a part of it again. But I honestly can't tell you the answer to that anymore. So until I see him on the side, I am boycotting Vontaze Burfict questions.
Well, I will write a note about it at some point this week.
So if you want to know about Vontaze Burfict, send it to @NKYSkinner.
Thank you.
Direct all those there. You can send him your Tyler Eifert questions as well.
No, do not do that. Not until that thing is resolved, please. I've gone down that path a thousand. He was supposed to be back. Yeah, he was supposed to be.
He's just not.
I didn't make the decision on this.
No. And there's no recourse because
he's the one designated for return.
He's already on IR, so it doesn't matter. He doesn't tell us anything or do anything about it. He could go on IR the rest of the season. It doesn't matter.
And oh yeah, AJ McCarron guy, he will not play this year, barring injury. So just settle down over in the corner. Yes, you, Larry from Alabama.
Luckily,
to this
I haven't gotten a whole lot of AJ McCarron stuff.
I haven't either. I haven't gotten many since preseason.
Yeah, when he practiced, I got a few that one day, and then that's really been it. I'm happy about that. I'm not big on talking about fifth round quarterbacks that are rookies. Okay, so we completed the podcast.
We ran the gamut.
We covered a lot for you. Hope you all enjoyed it.
Did you get a hand rolled Cuban cigar when you were in Tampa?
I didn't. I didn't get the hand rolled Cuban.
Utterly disappointed.
I know. I ate great seafood.
Now, for those who don't know, I didn't make the last three trips for some complications that are outside of my control.
Yeah.
I will be making the next two.
Next two
and then the playoff trips as well, wherever those may be. They may be at home for all I know.
They may be.
But maybe out to Arizona at the end of the year with you. How about that?
You're the king of optimism.
We'll get a hand rolled cigar out there.
That you were Santa Claus and I was the Grinch. Like,
I trust me. If they go 4-0, I may ride the tricycle on a diaper with you.
If they go 4-0, we both should be out there.
As we sit here today on December the 1st, you know what they have a potential to do in December? Go 4-0.
Go 4-0. Sure they do. Guess who else does? The Jags and the Bucks. Exactly. All of them have potential to go 4-0. The Bucks could win 4 in a row and end up in the playoffs.
Not going
to
happen. Yesterday almost mathematically eliminated them. That was the worst of all scenarios because now they're 3 games out with 4 to go.
If the Bucks go 4-0 and make the playoffs, you're in the diaper.
Dude, they're
for sure.
They're 3 games out, and keep this in mind, they haven't won 3 games.
No,
so,
they sure haven't.
There you go.
And they don't look like a team that has any thought of doing so. I think you make the charge for the number one pick at this point.
I'm leaning towards the Falcons winning that division.
Yeah, I think that's fair. They look good. I think,
a little healthier.
Yeah. I mean, what does it matter? I mean, between the Saints and the Falcons, they're both completely flawed teams.
Yes, they are. But they will be hosting Seattle in a first-round playoff game, probably.
Yeah, probably. You're probably right about that. Although...
Well, maybe Arizona, or maybe...
I was going to say...
Maybe Frisco.
Arizona looks like a team that might be tied to a cement block in the water right now.
That's got 9-7, just absolute pitfall written all over it, doesn't it?
Yeah, you don't want Drew Stanton.
No.
You just
especially when you can't run the ball now.
Yeah.
It's been bad.
All right, so let's get out of here this Tuesday on Beyond the Stripes. George Iloka. We're still locking down our guests for next week. So make sure you check that out. But every Tuesday morning, log out 7 o'clock. It's sponsored by JoeSpada.com, our best friends.
Good people.
Check them out. And so,
not quite as good as Willie, was it?
Willie, yeah. Willie, you know what? If Joseph Otto, if you need someone to do some repair work, I got a guy.
Now, he may get grease for 20 on the side. He may not give it all to the company, but that's all right.
I'm telling you, you want to hire Willie. I wish I could remember the name of this shady auto body shop off Hopple that I was at.
Willie didn't have a card.
Score Auto.
There you go, Score Auto, Willie.
I think he did not have a card. He was a very nice man.
Willie probably listens to the podcast every week.
I bet she doesn't.
Okay.
I have a feeling he does not.
Well, you just bought Willie around. Willie just bought a round at a neighborhood bar on you, Paul Daner Jr.
He sure did.
Feel proud of yourself.
Yeah. Make sure you check it out. We have the podcast up every Tuesday morning. We'll have that after the Pittsburgh game next week. Very exciting. What do you got, Skinny? Skinny, I had a feeling that you had some sort of musical choice that you wanted to break out.
Now, based on all the right moves that Marvin made. Oh, wait, he didn't.
He didn't make all the right moves.
Based on the fact that one of my favorite movies of all time, I actually watched a couple of minutes of it on Saturday. Don't ask me what it was on. All the Right Moves, starring Tom Cruise as a cornerback who was damned by his coach. But in the end, that coach came back to take him to Cal Poly Tech or wherever the heck it was. It's based in the Steel City. It's based in Ampipe.
Yeah?
Ampipe was the company. And based on the fact the Bengals are playing the Steelers and all the right moves that Marvin Lewis made, I think the theme from the movie, All the Right Moves, is our song to go out on.
You know what? I'll do it only because I don't like quashing your spirit.
Thank you.
You have a good spirit, and I feel like you put some time and energy into this.
I didn't. I usually don't. I usually just pops in my head, and I just run with it and hope you run with it
all
with
right,
me.
All right, well then, well, whatever. I'll still go with it. So we'll break out the theme for All the Right Moves, even though he only had one move, and that move was probably actually going to happen anyway. But so I appreciate your effort. But anyway, make sure you check us next week on the podcast, and we'll be back, and who the heck knows what's going to happen next week. So we'll talk to you then.